Welcome to episode 37 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. The topic for this episode is going to be, how do consultants determine what they're going to charge as an hourly rate or set rates for certain services? How does one arrive at the cost for those services? So I can say that from the past 20 plus years of doing consulting, that it's not always an easy process to determine what you're going to charge as a fee. One of the most common ways, I think, that people who are new to an industry will arrive at what they're going to charge is they look at what's sort of the average. They might call around and find out what are people charging in the area for that service. And if they're new, because they are maybe less experienced and also they're not as well known, they want to get into the market, they might charge a little less than what the going rate seems to be. But otherwise, for most people, at some point, they kind of look around and try to make sure that their rates are comparable to others in the area. So if you're working on lawn care or plumbing or remodels or whatever, you know that you may have to do a bid, or somebody's going to want to know what the cost is, and they may pay more if they think you're going to get better quality. But in general, people are looking to save money and have a project completed in a satisfactory way, in the most economical way. So another way to determine what charge or what fee you're going to assess for a certain service or hourly rate is to kind of estimate how many hours a week or a month do you plan to be able to have billable time. We imagine, oh, somebody can have billable time 40 hours a week, but that's not how it works. You spend, if you're a small business, you're doing your own accounting, you're doing your own customer service, follow-ups, administration, etc. So you may spend 10 or 20 hours a week just doing those things, and that doesn't seem glamorous. You feel like you're not getting paid for that work, but ultimately you kind of collect everything together and you will have put in 40 hours a week, even though you might have just been paid for the little bit of time that you spent on the billable time. So that's something to consider. How many hours a week can you have as billable time? Even if you had an assistant, a volunteer, somebody who was working for you and you didn't have to be concerned about the cost of that, an intern, for example, there's still a limit to how many hours a day you can schedule in. People's plans change. Some projects take longer than others, so you have to plan in some buffers in there. And that's why it's also, you know, possible to give a little discount to somebody who has some project that takes 4 or 5 hours, because you know that you won't have those buffers in there. If you were going to work 4 hours in a day and it was going to be 1 hour at one location, 2 hours at another location, and then 1 hour at another location, you would not want to schedule those back to back, you know, from 8 to 9 at one location and then have yourself scheduled at 9 o'clock at another location. There's travel time. There are these variables of something you thought was going to take 1 hour might take 1.5 hours or 2. So really, you can only schedule in a certain amount of time during the day without feeling kind of overstressed and overburdened and overstretched and then getting places late or whatever. You want to make sure you have plenty of buffer in there. So when people hear that somebody's charging, you know, $100 an hour, let's use that number as kind of an average for many professional services. That's what Best Buy charges for the Geek Squad. It's what you might pay at some automotive shops or to have work done on your home or whatever. But it's an easy number to use. So let's say somebody's charging $100 an hour, and somebody who is working a normal, you know, 8 to 5 job, if they're earning minimum wage or maybe a little better than minimum wage. Maybe they're earning $25, $30, $40 an hour. They might think, well, how can this person charge $100 an hour? Why do they think they are worth $100 an hour, etc.? And so the reality is that if they were working 40 hours a week, they could probably charge less than that amount, maybe. And if they had no other expenses and overhead to run the business, they could charge less than that. But for every $100 that comes in, certainly, you know, 20% or so goes out for taxes, and then maybe another 30% goes out or more for business operations and overhead, paying for software subscriptions and equipment and office supplies and things like that. And so what the person can eventually declare as income for a certain day, let's say, might just be really a fraction of that. Their actual net income might be $30, $40 an hour. And that's good. That's really good. But in order to have that kind of money coming in, that kind of income, then they need to be a small business owner. They need to take on the risks and the responsibilities of being a small business owner. And so anyway, that's a factor to consider, is how many hours during the day or during the week or during the month can you bill out? And you take that number and you know what your operating costs are going to be, roughly. If you're paying rent for an office or paying for other services, those are often fixed. So you just figure out, you know, what are your expenses going to be? What do you need in terms of an income to live on? And then calculate accordingly. And you may find that that's probably one measure of the success potential for a business is, does it add up? You know, are you able to charge something that's similar to the market rate and pay your bills and then have money left over for your own personal expenses for rent and groceries and all of that? Another consideration that people use when trying to determine what to bill is, what is the value to the person you are providing this service to? So if you are a consultant, let's say, for a business, you go in and you give them ideas on how they can save money, and you come up with an idea that's going to save them $1,000 a month, and it takes you, say, 10 hours to come up with that idea and develop it and present it. So they will pay you $1,000, and now they'll save $1,000 a month. But over a period of a year, that idea is going to be worth $12,000 to them. So you might be able to charge a little more or a fraction of the savings. You might say, well, I'd like to have 30% of what you'll save in the first year as my payment. And the business owner would say, okay, that sounds like a good investment. I'll spend, you know, a few thousand dollars to get a return of $12,000 every single year going forward. And there are other ways in which somebody who is helping with sales or helping with marketing, if they can generate a significant amount of revenue for the business, then maybe they should be paid more than just for a few hours of work. If somebody's selling a car or a home or whatever, they're making commission, then certainly they're getting paid not relative to the time they've put in, but relative to the value that is there. And so that's another consideration, is the value of the service, not so much how many hours went into providing the service. Another consideration that people sometimes will take into account is the economic abilities, you know, the economic well-being of the customers they're serving. So if there's somebody who clearly cannot afford a certain rate, sometimes lawyers will do this, they'll have a sliding scale. If there's somebody who just cannot afford to pay the normal rate, or in some cases, if they can't afford to pay at all, some businesses will just provide the service for free. And that certainly happens during times of natural disasters and crisis situations. You know, you'll see businesses out there providing free food or, you know, donating labor to clean up and do other things. But even when there are not disasters, when people are just having a hard time economically, that's a consideration. And it goes the other way as well. You know, you hear about businesses charging more if they're working with a big client. So if some big airline company or oil company or bank or whatever that has billions of dollars asks to have a service provided or a product provided, this happens in the defense contracting industry. If the buyer has a huge amount of money and everyone bidding on this project is bidding way, way high, then sometimes the bid and the product or service is a lot higher than you might normally expect in the marketplace. Now, this is sometimes viewed as a sort of targeted price gouging. You know, how much does it cost? How much do you have? Is the answer that comes back. So it's kind of viewed as somewhat unethical to be charging excessively if one thinks that they can get that from a customer. So we've talked about the market rate. What's the market rate? You can charge something similar to that. You look at your own overhead and costs, charge something that lets you cover that plus a reasonable livable wage. You can look at what's the value being delivered to the customer, and then also what's the economic power of the customer, and maybe make adjustments accordingly there. One of the challenges in the kind of consulting that I do, tech consulting, is that often there will be a list of support questions or support needs, and it's hard when you're given sort of a handful of computer issues and computer questions to know ahead of time exactly how much time it's going to take. So you'll go into a situation, in many cases the problem isn't clearly defined, the solution isn't known, so you can't predict what that's going to be. In other circumstances, there may be some task like setting up a new printer or replacing a hard drive with a solid state drive, some task that you would be doing over and over, and you'll get an idea of how long that typically should take. And then you could provide some sort of a la carte menu with specific pricing for certain services. But even then, that can have some unpredictable outcomes. So you might go to a job site, go to set up a printer, brand new computer. You're following the instructions step by step, and there's some error. Printer can't be found, but you know the printer's hooked up. And so I had this happen once where it was really mysterious. I did a Google search on it because it was sort of an unusual error message that was coming up, and many other people were having the same problem. Finally had to get online with HP. They remoted in, and it took them a long time to solve this problem. So there are these quirky situations that arise, and you know, if you've told somebody that setting up a printer might take, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, and you've given them sort of an estimate on that, then what do you do when it takes like 2 or 3 hours time waiting on hold with tech support and trying to figure out this issue? I mean, at some point, the printer is like you would refer to a car. If a car is damaged beyond its value, you know, the printer is unfunctional beyond its value. You would have to pay somebody $300 to get a $50 printer working. Well, that doesn't make sense. And so there are these extenuating circumstances where you look at, in the case of tech support, look at the value of the computer. And if the computer is only worth $100 and can be replaced easily by one that's worth $150 that's working, a used one, well, then that's going to impact what is reasonable to charge or to pay for that. And sometimes, you know, getting back to the value of the service, if I'm working on somebody's home computer and it's just being used for like email and the web and playing solitaire or something, it's not like a business environment, they're not making money off of this, the value to them and the value of that computer running in that moment is sort of, I wouldn't say minimal, but I would say, you know, standard use of the computer, standard value. If there's a business operation where you go in, you get a computer running, and they're going to use that computer to make millions of dollars or whatever, there again, if it's being used for a business, it's reasonable for the laborer to get paid a little more if there's revenue coming in that scenario. So, because what's happening basically is that the retired person who's using a computer at home and they're 90 years old and they're playing solitaire, they're going to pay a little bit less than the person who's using the computer for a lucrative business. Now, that's not taking advantage of the wealthy person. What that's doing is that's saying, hey, let's have a slightly lower cost for somebody who's elderly, who is retired, who's playing solitaire on their computer. Let's not have them pay the same amount as the day trader who earns $10,000 a day or whatever. You know, there should be some equity balance there. So anyway, though, that's what can happen. So there would be the $50 printer that takes 3 hours to set up, or the, you know, old computer. If you want to keep that computer from going into the landfill, volunteer some time, help the person get it going, charge them for a half an hour or an hour, but not more than that, then you've sort of done a good deed and you still made a little bit of money, but it's just not reasonable to charge more than an item is worth. Although I would throw into that idea that sometimes it's not the item that is of value. So you might say, oh, well, it's just a $100 computer, but the $100 computer has 10 years worth of data on it, and the data has value. So maybe it's someone who's a photographer, commercial photographer, wedding photographer. They have these photos on there, and the computer crashes. So there's value beyond the hardware, and it's important to them. And let's say, you know, look, it's going to take 5 hours to get this data back, and I kind of need to charge for my time. And they would say, hey, look, $500, $1,000, whatever it takes, need to have that data back. And they don't care about the computer itself. So, you know, there's just a variety of scenarios. I try to take very good notes when I'm working. I want to make sure that basically, unless there's some other circumstances, I'm going to work, take notes of what work is being performed, what research is being done, or whatever tasks are involved in accomplishing what the customer wants. And I have time stamps in there. So sometimes a project takes a long time, and by having those notes, it's possible to show somebody, you know, here's the 100 things I had to do in order to accomplish that task. And then they can be more informed and understanding of how a person arrives at the certain amount of time. And you want to keep people updated along the way, so they're not surprised by getting charged for 3 hours when they thought it might take an hour. Something I consider when billing is the quantity of work that somebody's provided. We're used to getting a better price for a larger quantity of services or products, shopping at Costco, whatever it might be, it's sort of common for people to think of discounts for volume. And when people get discounts for volume, they're more inclined to be less, you know, reserved. If they have tech questions, they would be more likely to pick up the phone and call if they know it's not costing the normal rate. And sometimes people will buy more of something if it's cheaper, because most folks are on some sort of budget. And that's why also it's good to let people know ahead of time what something might cost so they can budget accordingly. But anyway, this idea of the volume discount is, I think, important. It rewards people who are loyal customers that come back often, and it also is practical, you know, that when you, as I mentioned earlier, when you sit in one location and work 4 or 5 hours, or in one office working on several computers for 4 or 5 hours, that's, you know, one invoice instead of 5 invoices. It's one trip in the car or on the bike or however you're getting around. And so less transportation time, less, in a way it's like less work, you know, because it's just one thing after another. And so there's less sort of time invested in providing that service because it's more efficient. And therefore that savings can be passed on to the customer. We often hear that as a cliched statement. But so, yeah, that's true. And any other way that there can be savings, that's good to share that with the customer, as if the customer was a part owner of the business, you know, sort of like at a cooperative, credit union or cooperative health food store. The customers and the employees and the owners are all one. Well, anyway, something else that I like to do for my customers is if something requires a lot of research, a product purchase or something, I will write an article about that. And that article then becomes content on my website, and I don't charge them for that time. So that's a way to save them maybe $100 if it took an hour to do some research, and turn that into an article instead. It benefits them, reduces their costs. And then the article becomes a resource for future people having the same question. And it's an efficient way to work. It benefits everybody. So that's one thing that can be done. I don't know if that applies to other industries, but certainly with tech consulting, it does. And I might turn some research into a video or a podcast or an article on the website. But in any event, those bring more traffic to the website and they raise awareness about the website and the service, and in some cases could provide some revenue if there's advertising associated with it, such as affiliate links to products on Amazon. So anyway, there are ways to monetize and make money to save a customer some of that cost. Regarding the going market rate or value of a service, when we look at the hourly rate charged by Best Buy for, not for any specific task like setting up a printer, but just for general tech support, if they send somebody to your home, it's $100 an hour. You can get a special annual unlimited tech support contract with them, and that costs less. I guess they are hoping that you're not going to call them very much in that scenario. But what I want to say is that that $100 an hour that they charge is without much value added. It's good. I mean, you pay that rate and you get the service you asked for. But when you have someone come out from Best Buy or even some other similar service provider, you probably won't get the same person every time. They probably won't have 10, 20, 30 years experience. It's most typically maybe a high school or college student who's working part-time for a little extra money. So they'll know the basics, but they might not work as efficiently as somebody who has a lot more experience and does it full-time. There are some people who know a lot about technology, but they're not people. So they might know some aspect of how to use the computer, but they can't train you effectively on that. Either they're not good communicators, or maybe they don't have the patience. That's something that sometimes happens with people who have a lot of knowledge. Then they lose their patience for slowing down a little bit and sharing with others. Recently, I had a business contact me and their operations were down. They had lost their internet and phone service. And this is somebody I've worked with for a long time, so I was familiar with their equipment and how their office is laid out. I was able to help over the phone, and in under 5 minutes, we got the whole business back up and running. So there's an example where if you're talking to some tech support person over the phone who's not familiar with your business, then a small problem that could take 5 minutes to solve might end up taking hours and could even result in some things being done that didn't need to be done, and sometimes that creates even more problems. So anyway, there's a really big value in working with someone who you've worked with before, who knows your business or your home computing needs, and has familiarity with that so they can guide you through to the right solutions. And if you have somebody who is patient and is a good communicator, and has a lot of experience, then it's going to be an entirely different scenario, much more effective, much more pleasant, better outcomes, and ultimately lower cost. You know, if somebody's charging $70 an hour, but it takes them 2 hours to get a task done, and someone else is charging $100 an hour, and it takes them only an hour to get the task done, well, then you've saved $40. So you can't just go on what the hourly rate is. Something I strive to do in my consulting work is to under-promise and over-deliver is the phrase, but basically I'll try to estimate long. So a project that could take an hour and a half, there's some unknown variables there, so I'll say let's plan on 2 hours. And I'll let the person know the hourly rate. And so their expectation is 2 hours, $100 an hour. It could take a couple hundred dollars to take care of this list of tasks or a big project. And I will work quickly and smartly and try to get that work done in as little time as possible. And sometimes I'll be surprised in that it goes a lot smoother than I'd planned. So maybe it takes an hour and a half, or maybe it just takes an hour. So that person's going to be happy because it took less of their time. It resulted in them having less money to pay. And so in addition to trying to work hard and work smart, I will also round down. So let's say in the example of what was estimated to take 2 hours, let's say it just takes an hour and 45 minutes. So they're already happy about that. It took less time and it would be less money. Then I round it down. I say, you know, let's just, I'll just bill for an hour and a half. So now I've given away, volunteered some time there. And then, you know, depending on the customer and how long they've been a customer or other factors, I might even say, you know, hour and a half, it would be $150, but let's just call it $140, you know. So the hours get rounded down, the hourly rate gets rounded down, or the amount charged gets rounded down. And I always want to make sure there's never a discrepancy about, oh, somebody, you know, said it was going to take 2 hours, but it took 2.5, or someone, you know, billed for 2 hours, but it was actually just 1 hour and 45 minutes, or anything like that. I try to completely alleviate that from happening by doing these things. And actually, that's something that you'll want to plan into your business strategy. So know that you're not going to be billing 40 hours a week. It's probably going to be more like 15 to 20. Keep your schedule open. That means, you know, you're less stressed out. You're getting places on time, and projects that take longer won't impact the rest of your day. And always be willing to round down the hours and maybe charge a little less than what was expected. And use that number as the number that you're going to plan as your operating budget, you know. Because otherwise, the people get into trouble when they cut things too close to the line, and then they're trying to put more work into a day to earn more money, or they're being stingy on their billing, and you hear about, you know, some industries where people are less ethical. Maybe they will say something took 2 hours when it really took 1.5 hours, or they'll work slowly because they don't have enough work to do, so they'll kind of stretch projects out to try to earn more money. Or they'll say that a repair needs to be done and it actually didn't need to be done. So there's all those kinds of problems for consumers to watch out for. And as a business person, you want to stay far away from that kind of thing and make sure that you're in a situation where your business plan is solid based on you working a reasonable number of hours. And I think it's similar to what you'll hear in academic settings, that a teacher might be in the classroom for 1 hour, but the preparation for that hour might be another hour, you know, if they are trying to keep their curriculum current and interesting and utilizing new technologies. And so with consulting, you may not be having 1 hour of planning before 1 hour consulting session, but there may be some research that you do ahead of time. There's also just general professional development and continuing education, reading journals, being informed and up to date on available technologies and solutions. So yeah, you might work 20 hours of billable time and then another 20 hours of just doing those other things that are required to stay current in your profession, as well as what I mentioned earlier is the administrative work of paying bills and responding to emails and phone calls and things that don't necessarily generate money but need to be done. Well, I'm going to cut away to the audio from episode 36 that really fits in well with this topic about how to bill when you're a consultant and how sometimes projects can take longer than anticipated and what to do in those situations. I had a challenging purchase to make recently. I needed to buy a battery for a laptop computer for someone, and it's an older laptop computer, so it would be a battery that's not being purchased by the hundreds or thousands or whatever. There are going to be very few purchases of these batteries. There's quite a bit of competition among different people selling these old batteries or new batteries that are compatible with older equipment. And so I didn't have like 2,000 reviews to look through. There might just be 20 reviews or 30 reviews on these different batteries. And in this case, I was looking on Amazon. And it took a lot of research to determine which of the batteries were really of legitimate, reliable quality and which ones should be avoided. And I really had to go through every stage and layer that I've discussed previously here in this episode to figure out which battery to buy and from what vendor through Amazon. So one general rule in this particular search was to look for a battery where the vendor selling it had the same name as is printed on the box of the product, and that same name and same brand is printed on the battery itself. So at least I ruled out the possibility of an unknown manufacturer or an unknown company or brand or vendor. This was all tied together, so at least a little bit of a vertical market in that regard. And so there were a few that met that criteria, but some of them had very poor ratings for authenticity and reliability as far as the company. And so it really kind of narrowed down just one battery that seemed like there's a pretty good chance it's going to be reliable and, you know, work out of the box and work for a long time and have some good longevity. But we'll have to see. It's going to arrive tomorrow. And that was that, you know, process of tracking that down is what really inspired and prompted this podcast today, because I realized, you know, for most people, you might think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, go to Amazon or Newegg or Best Buy or whatever and search for this replacement battery, and whatever comes up, if it has some good ratings, I'll just buy it. And you really have to dig into the individual reviews, look for fakes, try to figure out if the complaints that the customers have are going to impact you significantly. You know, sometimes there's a complaint where they say, oh, this battery only lasts, you know, 3 hours instead of 3.5 hours, or, you know, some other such thing, that maybe the fit and finish wasn't just perfect, but it still works fine. You know, there are certain complaints that result in a 1-star or 2-star review that maybe don't warrant that. But you have to dig down into those reviews to see those details. And you have to do a little research, because you're not dealing with a company that you sort of know about, like Sony. If you're buying a battery that's a Sony battery from Sony for a Sony camera, you don't have to do a lot of research. But when you're searching for a battery, which is a potentially volatile component that could either be really good quality or not be good quality, you want to do that research, and there aren't big, well-known companies selling these. So it does take more of that research to get a good product. And with Amazon, at least there are free returns, so there is that part of the research process. You know, if you kind of limit how many hours you're going to spend on reading about something, eventually you buy something, and then the testing continues. Because if that product arrives and it really doesn't meet your expectations, if it was advertised incorrectly or falsely, or if it was misleading, then those are grounds for returning something, and usually then the store, the seller, will cover the cost of return shipping, and they'll apologize and say, oh, we're sorry, didn't realize this person was using advertising that's misleading. But some of these things you can only know by really just getting your hands on a product and seeing how well it works. And then, you know, hopefully you can contribute back to the reviews and give your own review and help other consumers on their quest for a product to find what might work best and what to avoid. Another factor in this purchase process was delivery time. The person I'm helping needed a quick turnaround for this product and for this repair. So instead of, you know, I might have waited longer. Sometimes you'll look through the available products on Amazon, for example, and you'll see one can be delivered by tomorrow and it's in stock. Another one might have better ratings and be from a better manufacturer and a more favored vendor, but then that product's not available till next week or for 2 weeks, and that's too long to wait. So there are a lot of factors that are going to determine the purchase decision, the ultimate product that you buy, and some of those can be unrelated to the manufacturer or vendor or store or whatever. It's just a matter of you need something quickly. And, you know, when time is essential, then sometimes people don't end up with the best value or the best product. And that also then makes it more challenging because you're kind of scrunched down into, oh, I would have had 40 different places I could have bought this or different products I could have selected. But now that we're crunching the time down into a 24 or 48 hour period, now you really have to dig down into these few items that are available in a quick period of time, which one of those are really legitimately going to be a good choice. As a tech consultant, I like to take good notes and document the work that I do, because much of that work really requires a lot of time, a lot of attention to detail, and a lot of thought goes into something as simple as a battery purchase. And I think it's important for customers to know that it's not as easy as just, you know, taking 5 minutes on Amazon to order a battery and then, you know, putting it in 10 minutes or something. You really have to plan on some additional time at any point in the process to dive a little deeper. And so I will provide usually written notes, sometimes an article, maybe a video or a podcast that explains some of the process. And even though something simple like a battery replacement could take a half an hour to an hour of time, I usually won't bill for all my time, because it really is just hard for people to understand the importance of doing this purchase research or how much time it takes to find a compatible quality product of value. And you can try to explain that to somebody, but to really dive into all these details, that's for most people not going to be of interest. They just want the product fixed or solved, problem solved. In the past, I would do a lot of my work at businesses, on site, or in someone's home, and they could see that I was working, and so they may not fully follow, you know, all the work that I was doing, but because of the screenshots and the notes, at least it could be detailed out to show, you know, this is the work that got done. Sort of like when you take your car to a mechanic, at least they'll give you kind of a review of what was needed and what parts were needed. So in the same way, I like to document my work. And I think then people can better realize and understand the value of what they're getting. And they can see that, you know, whatever I might be charging for my time is actually a discount or just a portion of covering the actual time and energy that went into it. And I think that just helps with customer relations, because people can then appreciate it if you've given them a discount. If they don't understand what goes into a process and they get a bill, depending on their expectation, you may have, you know, told them ahead of time what you think it might be or something, but still, you know, when people are paying for something, they may feel that they're paying a lot more than what they expected to, or than what they thought they should have to pay for a certain repair. I had a situation come up recently with a laptop computer that needed to be kind of have Windows reinstalled, basically. And computers have a restore process that really is pretty simple. You hold down a button when you're starting it, and then you go into the recovery mode and you kick off the recovery, and then pretty much sit and wait and do something else while it does the work for you. So I told this person, gave him kind of an estimate of how much time I thought it would take to rebuild or restore their computer. And it turned out it was a real hassle. The buttons that you would expect to hold down were not working. And so I had to do a lot of research into this particular model of computer from this particular manufacturer to find out how does one get into the BIOS, how do you boot up to a recovery partition if that's available, or how would you boot up to a USB Windows installation media. And so it was just lots of searching, lots of finding people posting similar questions, like, you know you're in trouble when you do a search for something and all you find are people posting that they're having the same problem, but nobody has the answer, you know. So that ended up taking a lot of time and research, and I had to kind of take breaks from it and go do other things and come back to it. So it stretched over several days, you know. And yet in that case, I ended up just charging that person a minimal amount for just a portion of the time I invested in it, because number one, I'd already given them an expectation that it should be pretty simple if the hardware was working, which it was. The hardware was working, you know, so I thought, yeah, it should be pretty simple. It shouldn't take much time. So they had an expectation. I had an expectation, and this just happens. So there's sometimes in business where you're going to do a bunch of work and it's going to be hard for the person to appreciate that and understand it, and you're not going to get paid for your work, and you're going to feel like, well, you might feel discouraged about that. But the thing to know is that overall, you look at the last 100 projects you worked on, yes, some are going to fall into that category, but most are going to be as you expected and as the customer expected, and a positive experience. So you just learn to accept that there are going to be those experiences along the way. It's just like if you were farming, you know, not every acre is going to produce the same amount of corn. You're going to have some acres where there wasn't enough water and too much runoff or whatever, and then other acres of land where the water kind of settled in, it was too wet, the yield's going to be lower, you know. And then you're going to have these perfect little squares of land where you got just an amazing yield, and wouldn't it be nice if you had that same yield across all of your fields or whatever. But, you know, it's just, there are these variations. So the same is true in probably any kind of work. So this episode was kind of long format and a little bit of a meandering conversation about consultant billing. But I wanted to share as many thoughts as I could on this subject. And that could be helpful for customers that are trying to understand why they get billed, how they do, either for tech work or other kinds of work. And it might be helpful to consultants to think about how they want to do their own billing. Well, thanks for listening. I appreciate all the comments and the follows and the shares, the subscribes, and I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.